everyone, and welcome back into a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have an incredible artist returning to talk to us about their company and the work that they are doing. Joining us today, we have the executive director, Jesse Fahey, who is also the executive producer on the upcoming show being presented by her organization, The Ripple Effect Artists. This organization is doing the show Radiant Vermin, June 19th through the 30th at the Sargent Theater, which is on 54th Street. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting rippleeffectartists.com. We're really excited to have Jesse back. We're so excited to be diving into this piece. If you go back and you tune into our previous conversation about their fundraiser around Valentine's Day, you'll remember that she had mentioned this upcoming show. So this is going to be amazing. Let's go ahead and just welcome back in our guest, Jesse. So glad to have you back here on Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much. It is so great to be back with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you reached out, that you were like, I've got this show. And I was like, yeah, you do have a show. It is in summer, but what was it? And the minute you reminded me of the title, I was like, I remember this. Yes, this is such an exciting piece. So
thank you for remembering, because it was quite some time ago we spoke. It was cold outside.
Yes. Spring has come. I'm so happy that. But can we start by having you tell us a little bit about what Radiant Vermin is about?
So this is quite the interesting caption and tagline. It is a dark satirical comedy addressing the housing crisis. So you might think, well, okay, the housing crisis is pretty serious and it's a pretty serious issue to talk about. And our homelessness crisis and what is on the minds of many New Yorkers is our migrant crisis. This is a pretty serious topic. There's a comedy about this? And the answer is yes, there is a dark satirical comedy written by a very brilliant dark satirical writer. His name's Philip Ridley, that is addressing this issue. So that is the through line, I would say, or the one sentence caption, so to speak. What I would say, I don't want to give too much away as far as what it's all about, is that there is a young couple who are struggling to buy a house, as so many young couples do. It's interesting to talk about New York City because we're not, you know, even in that conversation of purchasing homes. Very few of us who are, you know, in our young to mid or late 30s are in that conversation, even if we do want to have a family. But this is a young couple who they're just about to start a family. They're looking for a home, or they're looking to purchase a home. They're struggling a whole lot. They're not having a whole lot of luck. And then they're offered their dream home by a mysterious, enigmatic character. And they find out that certain improvements can be made to the home when certain acts are committed that will be found out when you see the show. I'm going to leave it that vague.
I love that. Yes. What a great little tagline to get us to come out even more.
I did my best. If I give too much away, it just won't do the piece justice. And I would say there's just a huge level of absurdism to it as well. Like there's a little bit of magic absurdism tied in with the very real issue of how it is we as human beings are around housing and the housing market and the housing crisis. And so I think a really powerful way and a really effective pushing the envelope sort of way of addressing that crisis is through this very absurdist lens and this very absurdist way of telling a story, because obviously audiences will look at this and know that it's not real and it's absurdism and this is not really how it happens. However, there's a cause and effect. There's a series of actions that take place. I will say very dark and dismal actions that take place over the course of the production that leads to results of those actions. So while it is very much absurdism and it could never actually happen in our day-to-day moment-to-moment life, it is a really poignant mirror of what does happen in our day-to-day moment-to-moment life, in that we are people who will at times take advantage at the expense of others, so much to a very, very drastic degree. And how can we look at ourselves when it comes to our homeless population and our housing population and our housing crisis? What we have taken on in the past when we addressed structural racism 5 years ago, we decided to, as a company, with our talkback conversations and with our show, we decided to actually have the focus be on Caucasian people. Because why is it that every time we're discussing the race issue, that it is a specific race or group that has to do the work? I happen to be a Caucasian woman. Why is it that there has yet to be enough conversations about us doing the work at looking at how we're at the source of various, I should say, atrocities or various systems and structures that are, to say at the very least, not fair? So we're doing the same thing with this. Not fair is putting it lightly, but we're doing the exact same thing with this production as well. So that's what it's about. As vague as possible, as I could, as vague as I could possibly be.
I love it though. That's fantastic. And
Thank you.
I want to build on that because I'm curious to know. I mean, the answer to this might be obvious, but what inspired you or where did you come up with the idea to do the show?
Well, so with Ripple Effect Artists, we always choose a topic to address first. So we knew we wanted to address homelessness. It's something that's been very near and dear to my heart as a New Yorker of 20 years. I'm seeing the effects of people without housing, I feel, at an exponential level this year in particular. And just seeing various sights that I never imagined I would see in New York City. And most people who live here and most people who we're discussing this topic with, they absolutely agree. So it started with that. And then I always wanted to produce Edward Albee. It's been a dream of mine. It has yet to happen. It will happen. And just to work with Edward Albee's writing would, in any way, would be an absolute dream. And we applied for the rights to Zoo Story. Someone else had that idea. And so such is the way when you're a producer, is you're gonna start applying for rights to a show about a year to a year and a half before you actually are up and running, just to ensure that you actually have the rights to do that show. So I started that process about 18 months ago, doing the looking, the researching, and we did not get the rights. And then we also knew that we really wanted to address this issue. So I kept on digging and digging. And then I found this play that is so incredibly fascinating. It takes this incredibly sad and dark subject and turns it on its head in a way that is comical. And it's comical in a way that leaves audiences uncomfortable with laughter. And those are always my favorite theatrical experiences, is when you start laughing, but then you realize, ooh, wait, should I laugh at this? I don't know. But that's really what has this incredible impact on audiences. So I read it. I loved the pithy dialogue. I love the super quick dialogue. He is a British writer. The director is not planning on doing this with the British dialect, and it was written with the British dialect in mind. And so it has this sort of dark, pithy, like Clue meets a very, very dark subject in a way, and with three characters. And I also love plays that have a cast of three to five, because everybody has a really good amount of meat, so to speak, to contribute to the production. And I love all plays in which you have these, or TV shows or films for that matter, where you have these seemingly normal, good characters who are doing all the right things. You know, they went to school and they met and they fell in love and they got married and now they want to have a baby and they're just following the right path. And then life throws them a little bit of an opportunity that's a little bit dark and a little corrupt. And they know it's a little dark and corrupt, but they're just gonna take one little step. They'll do one little millimeter in the wrong direction, And then maybe they'll do another millimeter in the wrong direction. And then before you know it, they're in this dark, very, very dark circle in place of committing horrifying acts. What I would compare that to, if anybody watched Ozark on Netflix, is like this very, very good, well-to-do, middle-class family. And then they just saw a little bit of opportunity for more money. And then all of a sudden they're in communication with the cartel every single day. It's like that. So I think I'm really fascinated, and we're all fascinated by characters like that because it could be us, right? It puts all of us seemingly normal, good doing people in check in a way.
I love that. I think you've hit at the core of that. I mean, that's literally, I mean, I share those feelings as well. I know that you haven't casted the show yet. That's the next big thing, but you do have your design team, you've got your venue and everything. So far, what has it been like developing the piece and getting it ready for this amazing company that's coming in?
Yeah, so it's been I mean, every show has its own journey and its own flavor of that journey and its own challenges and its own ways of ease that maybe you didn't think would be easy. So there's always differences. Ripple Effect Artists always hires directors. We hire directors who we know have a strong resume of reputable work, who we know really understand the mission. They don't necessarily have to be activists like us, and they do have to have an understanding and a heart for the mission because that's really how these stories are told. So we found a great director back in the summer. Her name is Kimberly Lauren Eaton. She's done some really fantastic work off Broadway. She's been a Broadway producer as well. She's worked with some really astounding people. So we're excited. Very much so. What I'm most excited about with bringing Kimberly in is her level of passion and care for the work, and her level of passion and care for ensuring that not only do we have a talented group of people, we have put extra special effort into our DEI efforts this year, which is really great. We have a very, very diverse team, which I'm excited about. And I will say this, we just had our auditions, and we're not finished casting yet. We just had our auditions at Actors Equity Association last week. And we definitely, I'll just say this as a little teaser. We had our characters be open to many different forms of casting, including non-binary. So I'll just say that. And that's something that's really exciting that we have yet to go down that road before. And that's just something that's very, very exciting. So that's been the exciting part of the process. And then, there are all kinds of breakdowns that happen and bring someone in and maybe the schedule doesn't work, or maybe somebody wants to do something one way and you had a vision of it going the other way. And it's all part of what it takes to come together in a creative and collaborative process.
That is so wonderful.
Thank you.
Again, with this next question, I have a feeling we know the answer, but I'll still ask it. So my next question for you is there a message or thought you're hoping that people take away from Radiant Vermin?
So great. All of our shows aim to ask questions versus make a statement. I think that's important in the arts. Nothing wrong with making statements. And what is lasting, especially in theater, what's really lasting is when people are left with questions. When people are left with questions, or when the show asks a question, that's what keeps people talking about it in dialogue. I have a huge want and vision for 15 years, and an intention that people leave our shows sitting around dinner or coffee or drinks and left with wanting to talk about the subject matter and maybe even debating about it and arguing about it. That's where the juice really comes, and maybe challenging each other about it. We have talk back conversations sometimes where people in the audience do disagree with each other, and they can. My intention is that they can find some common ground And those sorts of disagreements are needed and valid and important. So what I want people to leave with is challenging themselves with what more can I be doing? And where in my roots, maybe in my ancestry, maybe not me personally, but maybe in my ancestry, maybe in way in my background, there's some way in which I have been somewhat responsible and not like a fault or a problem or something to blame, but where have my roots, my ancestry, where has all of it been? Where have I been responsible? And if I was born of a certain privilege, what can I do to give back to those who are not? If that's something that's in my heart, right? People, organizations who I've spoken to who work hands-on with people who are without homes or who are houseless, all of them across the board who I've spoken to, and I've spoken to people from Habitat for Humanity, from the Bowery Mission, who they're going to be speaking with us, and also the Highland House, all of them say we are just one lost job away from homelessness. So for all of us to walk away as, and I don't want to terrify all of your listeners, it's an opportunity to look at, for any of us who might think that we are oh so above certain people or certain behavior, maybe there's a way to look at that dynamic differently. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, oh my gosh, no, that was a brilliant answer. And I think that just adds to the relatability of this piece. I want to build on that into our final question because, with it being such a relatable show, truly, who do you hope have access to this piece?
So we have our tickets listed on a few different portals. Anybody and everybody who loves seeing alternative and provocative theater that really pushes the envelope, we have access to this on TDF and Todaytix. It's of course on our website. We also open this up. People can contact us directly. We have very discounted rates for student groups. We always have, because we really want students to have access to this, by students meaning high school and college students. And we also open this up to groups that are out there. We have discounts out there for any special interest groups. So theater special interest groups that advocate for the homeless, but also special interest groups that are just interested in social good in any way. We have access to group discounts for them. They can reach out to us through the website directly, RippleEffectArtists.com. So that is what we are always out to build, is a community of people who are engaging in these conversations, and people who have all points of view. There are many, many points of view. We're posting about the housing crisis quite a bit in our social media channels as well. And a lot of people have a lot of opinions, and a lot of people are responding. And we're not agreeing or disagreeing with anybody. That's a practice that we have with Ripple Effect with our social media. I don't agree or disagree with anybody on social media. I just don't think that's a healthy personal practice anyway. So it's just not something I do personally. And I certainly don't do it within the company. And I also, my team doesn't respond. And we're having some interesting commentary and reaction, and we welcome all commentary. As long as it isn't profane or incredibly discriminatory, we welcome all commentary.
For the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back. And we have had you on before, which is so wonderful. But I want to turn a little bit of attention to the organization that you're the executive director of, Ripple Effect Artists. I just want to feature it for a moment. And as we've talked before, you are a community-supported organization. So I'm really curious to know, Who is it that makes up your community and your funders and
Yeah, thank you so much. So I really appreciate the question, and I will answer that first from just the logistics and the funding standpoint, and then I'm gonna turn it into something a little more personal if that works for everybody. So what makes up how it is that we are able to keep on producing theater is we have a board of directors. There are now six of us. We have an associate board. There are two members there. We have a team of volunteers we pull from and or that we are engaged with on an annual basis. And we have our funding mostly comes from really wonderful foundations like the Puffin Foundation, LMCC. Those are just two of the foundations that have given us repeated grants over the years, which I'm very grateful for. Jessica, my partner, is very grateful for. And then we have our theater goers, which of course they come to our events and they come to our productions and they purchase tickets. And that is the crux of really what keeps us going. And then a huge crux of what keeps us going, in addition to that, are our regular donors. So we've had donors over the last, again, 14 to 15 years that will repeatedly give what they can to keep this entire organization going as long as it's been going. There is a very special repeat donor who I would like to honor today. We have donors who are strangers, donors who I meet through various networking channels, donors who I meet through the world in people who do social good, like people who I've met through the UN and people who I've met who are working for various charities. So sometimes they're people who we know through 4 or 5 degrees of separation. And then sometimes they are family. And sometimes what it takes to actually begin a company is to engage and incorporate your friends and family that believe in your mission and believe in your cause. So I'm very grateful, and it's going to be difficult for me to get through this without getting a little bit shooken up. So thank you for those who are listening. Thank you for your patience in listening. An ongoing donor since the beginning and until the very end was my wonderful and beautiful Auntie Jane, who just passed a few weeks ago, a couple weeks ago. She was also an actress. She worked with incredible legends such as Ronnie Howard. She also was in a scene in the Andy Griffith Show with Jack Nicholson. She toured with Nat King Cole. She really had an extraordinary career. Started in Los Angeles, went to UCLA, came to New York in the 70s. She moved to Peter Cooper Village. For those of you who know Peter Cooper in Stuyvesant Town, she moved there when the artists were living in Peter Cooper in Stuyvesant Town, when that was the place where the artists were, right by Alphabet City in the 70s. And she stayed there the whole time. And there were so many incredible memories I have just of her apartment and seeing what it was for her to be an actor here in New York. She had a giant wall full of hats that she collected that we still have pictures of. She had a giant collection of playbills and pictures of her on stage. And she had a whole closet full of jewelry. And there were a couple of times, you know, as an artist, when you're in between apartments, right? That's sort of an ongoing story. When you're young in your 20s and you're an artist in New York, you're going to be in between apartments. And she came to my rescue a couple of times when I needed to crash on a couch in my time of trying, attempting to have an acting career over 20 years ago. When I first started producing, she came to our very first show and she came to all of our shows. But when she came to our very first show, which was Taming of the Shrew in 2010, she said, "You are so brave." And she kept on saying to everyone around her, "Jessie's so brave." And I think she has this understanding of that because she was an actor and an entrepreneur as well. And she knew what it took to actually take matters in your own hands and create something with your art, which is a whole other level of commitment and work, different from being an actor. Not better or worse, just very, very different. And she was this huge, larger than life inspiration. Every time she was sick or in a hospital, doctors and nurses just fell in love with her instantly. And every time the family would visit her at a hospital, they would say, "Oh my gosh, we love her. She's a star. We love her." And she was always willing to own just how talented she is. And I think that is something so many women in this industry have struggled to do. I know it's something I've struggled to do. I have struggled to come off stage and say I was great in that. It's something I've never been able to do. And she was able to do it. And she was incredibly talented as well. And so she understood what it was to love a life of an artist in New York and love the life of being a performer in New York. She loved and cherished this city. She taught me to love and cherish the city and love and cherish the path of what it is to be a creator of all times, and that it can be done. And there might be fears of money or lack of structure, and it absolutely can be done and should be done if that's what's in your heart. And she was somebody I always went to Broadway shows with before she started to be somewhat ill these past couple of years. We would always go to Broadway shows, at least two or three a year. We'd thumb through the playbill and she would show me who her favorite actors were. And I could just talk to her for hours about this art that we both love. So, for anybody listening, thank you for loving her. Thank you for knowing her. Many actors with Ripple Effect got to meet her, many directors got to meet her. And just thank you for embracing her. And Annie Jane, thank you for embracing all that I was and all the failures I might have made and all the stresses and successes that might have come after those failures, that you were a part of them. I want to say my aunt was a part of them. And just thank you for being somebody who, no matter what, you always showed up. If she had difficulty walking, if she had difficulty in the winter with travel in New York, she just showed up. She always showed up in her fabulous fur coats and her beautiful jewelry and always said wonderful congratulations and wow. And just thank you for being that presence, not just for me, but for so many people. And we miss you and we love you. So that's it. Thank you for giving me the time to do that.
Was beautiful. First of all, from all of us here at Stage Whisper, we are so sorry for this tremendous loss, not just to your family, but to your organization and to the community at large. But secondly, I mean, what a beautiful tribute. I think that your aunt couldn't have asked for more. That is just
Thank
beautiful.
you.
And she will live on in this wonderful work that you and your company continue to do. So thank you for that. That was so wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. I would be so incredibly remiss if I didn't mention her on a theater podcast.
We are honored to have her name now, like just
Yeah.
right there in the tomes, you know?
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
Janie Kelly was her full name. Just want to state for the record. Yeah.
A legend gone far too soon.
Absolutely.
Too soon.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I do want to build on that a little bit because I can't let you go without asking our favorite question. Of course, that is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Oh, wow.
Hopefully we can transition and, get you some a happier headspace.
No, yeah, that's a perfect segue because I was just talking about theater memories with her. And so that's with my Annie Jane. So that's kind of a really perfect segue. So many. I told you the last time we spoke that I have many. We spoke at length about A Normal Heart the last time I was on. So love it, love it. Incredible. It's a big reason why, we started Ripple Effect. And I will now say that's one of the favorites. I want to talk about another favorite. Just in honor of her, we saw the one that really sticks out in my head of what we saw together was Iceman Cometh with Denzel Washington. So that's definitely another one of my favorites. And I love that sort of writing. I love brilliant writing. And I embarrassingly didn't know that much about the show. I knew the premise of the show, but I didn't know the mechanics of it. So, by that, just to put it simply, I didn't know it was 4 hours long. I don't know why. I should have known that. And actually, now that I'm saying that, I'm remembering back, Kevin Spacey did a version of it, I think, when I first moved to New York, I think maybe 2005. And I want to say that that version maybe was 6 hours. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you do with yourself if you are seeing a show. And they didn't split it up into two performances either. It was like 6 hours, you're at the theater. So it's like you're going to spend your whole day like nothing else, right? I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. If I'm incorrect, anyone is welcome to write to me and tell me how wrong I am and we can edit this out. But I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. So yeah, so this version that we saw was 4 hours. And I remember sitting down with her. I got seats that were in the box, and it was just because it was because I could work it out that way. So we had box seats, so we were way, way, way over. And so we had this sort of obstructed view. And she said, "You know, this show's 4 hours." And I said, "Oh my gosh, wow." And I remember thinking to myself, you know, is she gonna get tired? Is she gonna wanna leave? Is this gonna be tough, right, for her to get through? Because I think it started at 7, but still, you know, 11 o'clock is a commitment. And this is what I loved so much about my relationship with her and just watching her too. In the middle of the intermission, I loved the show and I was feeling myself get tired. And she was up and talking and like, yeah, this happens and this happens. And then later we're going to see this. And yeah. And then we left and she wanted to continue talking about it. So it's one of those shows that is so long and you have no idea how long it is because that's just how compelling it is. David Morse was in it, who's absolutely incredible. So it keeps you spellbound and really enticed and looking at, you know, on the surface, it's about alcoholism, but it's about so much more. And so that's another favorite memory of mine that I want to say in honor of her.
That is a fantastic memory. I love
Thank you.
that. Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you or your company, Ripple Effect Artists, have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
Thank you for asking. So next year, we're toying around. So we don't have a specific project yet. We will let everyone know, but we're toying around with this topic that maybe some of you have heard of. It's called AI. Is that, are we talking about that? Are people talking about that? Is that something that's, you know, discussed? Maybe there were some strikes about it, I think. I don't know. So yeah, forgive a little bit of sarcasm on this fine Tuesday morning. So we're tinkering around with the idea of taking that on as a topic because we, interestingly, without calling it AI, we took on this concept of human labor being replaced by machines. We took that on 10 years ago. We did a play called The Adding Machine, and that was just when big tech was starting to really be in everyone's vocabulary quite a bit. And now that AI is in everyone's vocabulary, we're toying with what it might be to do a 10-year reunion of The Adding Machine. So that's a possibility. There's another possibility of a theme, and it's actually quite personal to me now. But there's a possibility of a theme of looking at the conversation around ensuring that there is the utmost peace and grace and civility when it comes to the end of one's life and the topic of euthanasia. So we might produce David Rabe's play, which is A Question of Mercy. That has to do with the AIDS epidemic, but also has to do with the topic of euthanasia. And so I've always wanted to produce David Rabe as well. I love Hurley Burley, love all of his work. So we're going down one of those two paths, and we're still in conversations about that.
That is fantastic. Some great ideas being tossed around. I love that. Well, that leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Radiant Vermin or about you or Ripple Effect Artists, maybe they want to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Best way to do it, just head to our website, Ripple Effect Artists. I'll spell it out, RIPPLEE, F like Frank, ECT, artists, ARTISTS, plural.com. And right there on the homepage, you'll see tickets to Radian Berman. And then you can click on something called Contact, and you can contact us directly through the website. And you can also log on to our social media channels from there too. That's just the best way to go about all ways of getting in touch with us.
Amazing.
Thank
Well,
you.
Jesse, thank you so much for stopping by today, sharing with us this incredible show that's coming up. I'm so excited about it. Sharing your beautiful and wonderful thoughts and memories. This has just been such a special episode. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. So appreciate it. And thank you for hosting such an important podcast for the world of theater lovers and theater art. And it's been great to be here.
Thank you. My guest today has been the incredible executive director of Ripple Effect Artists and the executive producer of the show, the topic of today's show, Jessie Fahey. She joined us to talk about Ripple Effect Artists' presentation of Radiant Vermin, playing June 19th through June 30th at Sargent Theater on 54th Street. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting rippleeffectartist.com. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But come on out, join us at the theater. We'll make it a stage whisper night at the theater for this great, this timely, this fantastic new piece, Radiant Vermin. Again, it's happening June 19th through the 30th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.